Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak. We are going through another division in the NFL as we preview every single division in the NFL before the NFL season kicks off. Did I hit the SEO right there? Did I say NFL enough so that Google can pick up this podcast?
Yeah. Listen, did I say it enough times? Google is listening to the show.
I am hammering it.
And choosing where to rank it. Like, wow, he said NFL a whole gosh darn lot, didn't he?
Listen,
he must be worthy of searching.
Our phones listen to us when we're not using them. Get woke, people. The microphone is always on. They're always listening to you. What you say out loud with your friends is what shows up on your Instagram feed like at 30 minutes later for an advertisement.
Is this a real thing?
Yeah, no, I'm like dead ass serious. Yes.
Okay, I don't have an Instagram, so I really wouldn't know.
Yeah, if you, it's a funny kind of like haha joke, but we're also like sweating inside because people are listening to us. The things that you search online, like if you search for a flight, if you go to Google and you have your Google account linked to a lot of other things that you do, go and search a flight. Just like search a Frontier flight or an American Airlines flight or something like that. And if you go on Instagram like 30 minutes later and you just start scrolling your feed, you'll see an advertisement for Frontier or for American Airlines. It's terrifying.
Sometimes, yeah, don't like that.
Sometimes I don't even like search stuff. I just talk about it and I feel like it pops up on my Instagram feed, which is probably illegal. But we're not here to talk about...
Welcome to the show.
We're not here to talk about... We're not here to talk about conspiracy theories of the government
Friday.
Watching us.
Yeah, this Fan Friday, I'm deciding it. This Fan Friday is 100% conspiracy Fan Friday. We want your best conspiracy-related questions for this Fan Friday.
Wow.
I don't know any of these conspiracies. Like, I didn't understand the Area 51 thing. So you can really get me going.
Okay.
If you come up with some good ones.
Okay. All right. I like it. I like it. What did we have last week? Last week was Thick Boy. The other one before was Riddles.
Riddles.
This one's conspiracy theories. I'm all about it.
The
you
one
guys...
thing Fan Friday was really jonesing for was a theme. Because we weren't getting enough questions. We had to make it thematic.
Well, we're just evolving. Naturally.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Natural selection. There you go.
Speaking of conspiracy theories, how in the hell does Mitchell Trubisky have like the fifth highest odds to win MVP? We're talking about NFC North teams today. Going through, and we're going to do all four of these teams. We're starting off with the Chicago Bears because that was the perfect segue because I don't get it. Is Mitch Trubisky a guy who you could look at and think, all right, we could develop him into a pretty good starting quarterback here? Sure, I'm buying that. All right, fine, great. Fifth highest MVP odds? Get the absolute hell out of here.
Okay,
where is this coming
from? From the recent numbers that I can see, he has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Okay, so then they updated it to 9.
Right, so he's equal to Phillip Rivers and Deshaun Watson. He's above
Hold on there.
And Russell Wilson and Matt Ryan.
What?
And Jared Goff.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Take away the Bucs game last year where he had like 6 touchdowns. And he was just like, he had a good year, but man, people are blowing this up. People are blowing up Mitchell Trubisky. Do you like him? How big of a fan of a Trubisky fan are you?
I'm fine with Trubisky. I will revile the most ardent Chicago and Trubisky fans one day, and the very next day I will mock those who think he's like not a starting NFL quarterback. Like, I think he's fine. He's a starter, and he's not great, and he's not bad, and I don't know if you can win a Super Bowl with him, so maybe it's all lost anyway. But I don't have a significant problem with him. I mean, I think that he's certainly gun shy. I think that he certainly is a much more of a scramble first quarterback than people realize. And there's growth there for sure. The big thing that people want to hang their hats on, which I'm willing to buy into an extent,
QB wins,
is Matt Nagy offense second year, not QB wins, very close. But it's the whole idea behind. All right, so he was in the Nagy offense for the first year last year, and obviously, as we know, Nagy added a ton of weapons for him in that first year. Trubisky saw a measurable step forward, a measurable improvement. However, it wasn't necessarily like a huge quantum leap, and you still think there's a lot of room for him to get better, and this offense hopefully as well get better. You've got a great offensive line here. You have now, Allen Robinson's going to be in his second year in the system. Taylor Gabriel, Anthony Miller, second year in the system. Tariq Cohen's now the starter. It just, to me, it very much seems like there's an expectation that in the second year with Nagy, things are going to be even stronger for Trubisky. I can buy into that. To an MVP tune, absolutely not.
No, that's crazy.
Like, just to a right, just in the sense of, like, I think that Trubisky could have fine numbers and could just establish himself as a fine, acceptable starter in the league. Absolutely. I really, really think he's that's okay and that's fine. Bears team, if they go deep in the playoffs, it's going to be on the back of the defense. Not going to be the back of the offense.
Well, I think the offense is going to be fine. I like the Bears. I think they're going to repeat as division champs. They went 12-4 last year. I think the team's pretty dang good. I don't really know what to think of a lot of there. I think there's a lot more question marks throughout the NFC North than people are caring to admit. But when I look at this Bears team, I see a talented offense, pretty talented offense. I like their offensive weapons. I obviously think Trubisky's fine. I actually really like the David Montgomery pick. So I think that he's going to help their team a lot. And then obviously their defense has got some crazy good names to it. I mean, Eddie Goldman, Khalil Mack, Roquan Smith. I think Leonard Floyd is fine. A lot of people pick on him, but Eddie Jackson's a rising star in the secondary. And so they got some star players on defense. And I agree with you, it'll be on the shoulders of the defense that they ride deep into the playoffs. But I also think the offense is going to be fine and they're going to be able to compete. Now, I don't think, going back to the Trubisky thing, I don't think the Trubisky is going to shoulder a lot of that offensive reason why they're super successful. So that's why I think the MVP talk is crazy. But for how the team's built, for who their head coach is, for what their defense looks like, I think they're a really solid team. I think they're a pretty deep team. They're a talented team. And I think that, like I just said, I think they're going to repeat as champs in the NFC North.
I think that losing Vic Fangio is a bigger deal for this defense than we acknowledge it to be. I think there's obviously still a ton of talent, but I think defense just naturally regresses down to the mean. It's not a sticky year-to-year consistency. Like, unless you're really the Baltimore Ravens, you just don't have a good defense year after year after year after year after year. It's very irregular for that to happen at the NFL level. So I'm not sold that the defense wins as many games for them as it did last year. And so then it's a question of how much of a step up does the Bears offense take. Now, in the NFC North, it feels like one of two things is going to happen. Either the entire NFC North is going to be 8-8, 9-7. You know, it's going to be like a slugfest all year. Or it's going to be a situation where, like, the Bears, the Packers, and the Vikings are all, like, really, really good. And then obviously it's still a slugfest when you get to those games. But these are, like, you know, they're potentially sending two teams to the playoffs. Chicago, I don't see them being able to separate themselves out from Green Bay and from Minnesota. I don't see this as being a, like, I'll be shocked if the NFC North winner is secured in, like, week 15. You know what I mean? I think there's still just going to be, like, a ton of work to be done. I think the Bears could be good. I think the Bears are definitely, like, a playoff caliber team. In the quality of the division in which they play, I'm not locked in on them winning a division. And then, accordingly, I'm not locked in on them getting necessarily a wild card spot just because of the amount of tough teams that they're going to have to play as the first team in the NFC North facing the whole division and then getting teams like Dallas, like New Orleans on the flip, you know, because they're the first team in the division.
I talked about the guy that I really like for them is David Montgomery. A lot of people had David Montgomery as their RB1. I was not in that camp, but for what I think Chicago is looking to get out of him, especially with a guy like Tariq Cohen already on the team, he gives you a lot of smash to that Tariq Cohen dash, I think. He really completes what they're looking for. They're not looking to have a feature role. They're looking to keep rotating guys in and out, use a lot of different offensive weapons, and I think Montgomery certainly has a niche and a place that he can find right away to really help this team out in short yardage situations, give him a boost, you know, big broken tackle to get a first down, really motivate some things. I think he's a well-rounded player. I didn't think he was super athletic, so I wondered how good David Montgomery was going to be depending on his draft spot. But with him going to Chicago, I actually really, really like that fit. And so he would be my rookie that I'm most looking forward to for Chicago because I think he's going to have the biggest impact right away.
Yeah, and Demo is exciting. A lot of people are thrilled about his potential and everything like that. I wasn't the biggest him fan, but being in a Nagy offense is never bad, especially with the receiving experience. I talked about Darwin Thompson at Utah State playing in the Andy Reid offense on the last podcast. Montgomery was a highly effective receiver at Iowa State, and he goes into a very much Andy Reid offense with Matt Nagy as his head coach. So I think he's going to get, like Cohen does, a fair bit of targets and be productive in that way. I'm not going to go with him, however. I think Duke Shelley out of Kansas State is a big deal. Sixth-round pick, This is a guy who was built playing nickel. He's not an outside corner. They lose Bryce Callahan to Denver. He follows Vic Fangio to the Broncos. Buster Skrine is acquired during free agency. You have Kevin Tolliver in the building, but Skrine has not been a thrilling outside starter for a lot of people. You know, or an inside starter, excuse me. Like Skrine's been tried at the nickel in multiple spots.
He
for
does
multiple
have
years.
The best hair in the NFL.
Yeah, great hair, but it's not the nickel play does not match the quality of the hair. And so Shelley is a player who I think has the
which
ability.
Is, you know, where you would want your priorities to be.
Yeah, exactly.
I would rather I'd rather have hair.
Absolutely. And that's not to be argued. But I think in some nickel and some dime packages, they're going to get Deion Bush out in the field, the third safety. So I'm not sure if Shelley is a dime sub package player early, but I think that he has an angle to win regular nickel jobs. And I think he's probably corner four above Kevin Tolliver in the event of one of Kyle Fuller or Buster Skrine going down.
Yeah.
And so I think Shelley is,
I agree,
you know,
with
for a sixth round pick in line for more playing time than you'd expect.
I agree with that. I actually really liked the Shelley pick. I thought it was surprising that he went there, and I actually really liked the fit that
he was a fun player. I think that nickel
no,
was a good spot for him.
I agree. Now, we talked about a little bit there with the playoffs of who we might think are some playoff caliber teams with the Chicago Bears, but the one team that we did not name was the Detroit Lions. You talked about even if it's going to be tight, it's going to be between the Vikings and the Packers and the Bears. Lions were not mentioned. They did not, those words did not come out of your mouth at all when we were discussing it. Matthew Stafford's still the quarterback. Matt Patricia is still the head coach. Their offensive weapons, Kenny Golladay, Marvin Jones. Now they add TJ Hockenson at tight end. It's pretty high to pick a tight end, but you got to hope that you get something out of him early. You really hope that he's a missing piece, and they certainly do hope that. They have Danny Amendola and Brandon Powell in the slot. So it's an offense that, you know, off the arm of Matthew Stafford, who we have seen before and who, when we had trivia night the other night, stumped a lot of people that Matthew Stafford has had multiple 5,000-yard passing seasons. But
wow.
This dude just chucks it, man. I know he's got Kerryon Johnson with him now, so it doesn't have to be totally on his shoulders. But this offense is going to go through Matt Stafford. On defense, they've got Snacks Harrison. They've got guys like Deshaun Hand and A'shaun Robinson. They have Trey Flowers now. Gerard Davis in the middle at that middle linebacker spot. They drafted Jelani Tavai. Jalen Reeves, Maven Hive, stand up. We're still holding hope. We're
yeah,
still holding out.
Game,
we are still holding
we're
out hope.
On
In the secondary, they got Justin Coleman. They got Darius Slay. Slay is proving to be one of the best corners in the NFL, but it's about surrounding him with some other secondary guys to really complete that secondary group. And so there are some decent names that I named, Ben, but I'm agreeing with you that I don't really think the Lions are poised to make a run at a playoff spot, turn it around, really compete for this division. Is it all because of Matt Patricia, or where's the big hold up with you believing in the Detroit Lions?
Patricia, Darrell Bevell, and what's the offense? I would love to tell you that I think Marvin Jones, Kenny Golladay, and Danny Amendola are enough. Obviously, you add in TJ Hockenson for an NFL pass catching repertoire. The most successful Stafford seasons, the most successful Lions offenses we've seen have come with an unbelievable volume of passes for Stafford. I just don't think he's the same caliber of a thrower as he was when he was 24, when he was putting up those seasons. And he's more scattershot. I think his mechanics when we talk about quarterback mechanics, it's actually a really fascinating note for a draft podcast. When we talk about quarterback mechanics, it always gets framed in the perspective of accuracy, right? Like, you need to have consistent mechanics so you can consistently deliver the football on time, on location, with the correct arc as expected. Okay, cool. Players have unique mechanics. Phillip Rivers, Patrick Mahomes, Matthew Stafford. Stafford's always had a sidearm release. Has that affected accuracy? Well, it really wasn't too much of an accuracy issue with Stafford. He's not the most accurate quarterback, but it's fine. And so, you know, okay, so mechanical issue is all right. Not necessarily, because the second aspect of why consistent mechanics are important for quarterback play, which never gets discussed, is health and longevity. When you throw at it from a sidearm position, you're not getting what's called your elbow and your shoulder up into zero position, a neutral position where, you know, you're not putting extra strain on one side of the shoulder, extra strain on one tension. That zero position, you know, if you do physical therapy, if you're, you know, kinesiology and kinetic sciences, it's a neutral position. That's why it's called zero position. The inability to get the elbow up above the shoulder doesn't put the shoulder in a neutral position, but strain on the shoulder and the sidearm release. It's why you don't see sidearm pitchers much anymore in baseball because of the whip action it puts on the elbow. Stafford's been deteriorating in terms of accuracy for sure, and then arguably, and I'm not ready to make this argument strongly, but arguably in terms of arm strength a little bit, and it's very likely at least related to the fact that he doesn't have great mechanics, great upper body mechanics during the football. So I don't think Stafford is necessarily a like lift up the team around him quarterback anymore. Receiving core is is Golden Tate is gone. We replaced with Danny Amendola.
Yeah.
Kenny Galladay. I didn't realize how good Kenny Galladay had been for this team in his.
Oh yeah, there. Dude.
Yeah,
oh,
but Galladay yeah. played well. And then you have Marvin Jones. Who Jones has always been a good complimentary piece. Whatever. Hawkinson hopefully is a big part of it. Is the running game going to be big enough deal to create a difference? And that's always been the question in Stafford's career. Obviously, Stafford famously going like 32 games without a 100-yard rush or whatever it was, just an obscene number.
Kerryon Johnson
now
stat.
Is supposed to be the guy. He's got to be healthy now. They bring in C.J. Anderson after he has the revival in Los Angeles. I Kerryon Johnson might rush for 100 yards. I don't see a super strong offensive line here. I don't see a top 15 offensive line. I don't see a top 15 backfield. And so I don't think the running game is a huge difference. So now we're back to just trying to put everything on Stafford's shoulders, which in progressive years has been getting less and less and less effective for the Lions. So either a philosophy shift is needed, and that's a big part of, I think, the addition of Darrell Bevell, or a change of quarterback is needed. Those are your two options there. You know what I mean? Your formula,
yeah,
which you've been sticking to for a few years now, has gotten progressively worse. And so Bevell hopefully incorporates more play action, more outside of the pocket, and then the running game becomes more effective. Yeah, I mean, this defense, I've joked about it. Matt Patricia's trying to prove you can win football games by only having a defensive line. You know what I mean? Like Trey Flowers, Romeo Okwara, Mike Daniels, Deshaun Hand, Deshaun Robinson, Devon Harrison. I mean, it's unbelievable the two deep that they have here. Like, Austin Bryant, fourth round pick this year, is probably the seventh best kid on their line. Like, it's crazy. So that's exciting. The linebacker core isn't strong, and you've got some unknowns in the secondary in terms of your guy, like Tracy Walker's getting put into this situation. You hope that he's
right.
good, obviously, after you let Glover Quinn walk. So there's a little bit of uncertainty in the back seven. It's like the front four is the whole identity of the defense, and then the offense is still just Matt Stafford. So like, I have no reason to believe the Lions are different, so I have no reason to believe the Lions are going to be good.
Yeah, what was your record last year? I was looking at it. 6-10.
Yeah.
So, do you think they're going to be better than 6-10, or do you think it's going to be about the same, 5-11, 6-10, something like that?
I would expect it to be about the same. That
yeah.
feels right to me.
Who are you going to pick as your rookie? I don't want to. Are you going to pick T.J. Hockenson or no?
No, you can go for it. It's okay.
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 I wasn't sure because I had another guy that I could have talked about that I'll just note. But Hockenson's obviously the big one, right? Anytime
I know
you
who your
draft,
other guy is.
Yeah, you probably do. Anytime you draft a tight end that high, you're really playing roulette with the value game, right? Because these guys really have to make a difference. Now, in today's version of the NFL, teams are open and offensive minds are open to allowing tight ends to have more value than ever. You know, we're seeing guys like Zach Ertz, like Travis Kelce, like Gronk was. Like, teams are using tight ends everywhere to be big difference makers, mismatch chess pieces every single week. That's what they hope they have in T.J. Hockenson. Because as you go around the league,
yeah.
and not saying that Matt Patricia's his teams are going to get real Sean McVay-ish very soon, but there's a trend in offense around the NFL where these teams are getting to a point where it's not cramming a lot of different formations into a playbook. It's running a lot of different plays under a strict amount of formations because you want to be able to, and a lot of that has to do with play under center because it revolves around play action, right? So in order to do that, you go 12 personnel, you go 13 personnel sometimes. You've got two tight ends on the field, and what you do is you have the allurement of, hey, they could be running, they could be passing on every single play. When you have a tight end like those guys that I named, or you could throw O.J. Howard's name in there as well, guys who can really block as well as be good receivers, they're really good chess pieces. They're guys that you can move in and out of lineups around different spots, left or right, offline, inline, and you can play a lot of different formations, play a lot of different looks because they can be blockers or receivers. That's going to be a big key to, I think, what the Lions do and how they use T.J. Hockenson, how effective they can remain in running the ball. You talked about running the ball being a big deal because you don't think that Stafford has that arm where he can just chuck it 50 times a game every single week. I agree with you there, and part of what would be unlocking a good running game behind him would be that tight end play. The effectiveness of what TJ Hockenson can do and what he can bring to this offense, that's what we've got to see from him. And that's what we've got to see from him to be worthy of the top overall selection that he was given. So that he's a good guy. And then my other dude, I'll just say Amani Arawarie.
I had him.
I had him high. Were you going to say him or no?
I mean, I can talk about him. I can talk about Ty Johnson. But Arawarie, firstly, number 21 is open. They cut Marcus Cooper, who was 21. So Arawarie can literally jumpstart his career before it even begins. Get the heck out of 46 or whatever the God's name it is. 45.
It is. He's wearing number 46.
Yes, we have an opportunity here. There's a window. Get out of it. 21, put it back on. But anyway, this is important, but not what you were going to talk about.
It says Jamar Summers is 21 on this.
Well, let's cut Jamar Summers.
Well, okay. First of all, Birmingham, Iron Great. How dare you?
Oh, that's AAF, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Arawarie was a guy who, I mean, to me, it was early two. I don't know where you had him, but he was...
No, I had him same spot. I had him in early two, man.
Yeah, it was borderline round one for a lot of people. He ends up going round five. One-year starter was a lot of the narrative around that.
Yeah, but like he was one of those situations where it's like, okay, who did this guy kill? You know, where is this guy? Like, where is this guy buried his bodies? Why is he not getting picked?
Like, there's sometimes where like we talk a lot more about, like, we in the media talk a lot more about a guy than like the NFL does, and I really feel like that was not the case with Arawarie. Like, it really very much seems like Arawarie was, like, you know, getting discourse as one of the top corners from the league for a while, but whatever. Arawarie thought he was a potential, you know, year one starter, thought he was a equally good press and off and zone cover corner with a lot of skills. Thought that he had even more to suss out as a press guy because of some of his length and strength. Thought he was really, really good addressing the football with his eyes in the backfield. When I look at this cornerback room, they're still trying to get something out of Jalen Tabor. They've got Rashawn Melvin.
Get a great.
What must be Rashawn Melvin's 85th season as an NFL player? There's a lot of room to move up in the ranks of outside corners. Obviously, when you're starting, you know, a Darius Slay on one side, that's going to be pretty much locked up. But Justin Coleman was a nickel in Seattle. Right now, he might be started to be the starter opposite in the opposite outside spot. I think you'd like to see Coleman get into the nickel in order to do so. It's not like you're putting Jamal Agnew on the outside. Agnew's also a nickel player. I mean, Arawarie is a huge opportunity if he's as good as we think he is. So I'd love to see Arawarie. He'll clearly be rostered. He'll clearly be a part of the depth. I think if he gets on the field, he's going to be all right.
We spend so much time on the team that we think is not going to make the playoffs out of this division.
Good at podcasting.
We really did. Minnesota Vikings. Kirk Cousins. Kyle Rudolph. Stephon Diggs.
Did you say Kirk or Kurt?
Kirk.
Oh, dang it. I thought you said Kurt, and I was about to be so proud of you.
Kurt? Why?
Yeah, like he in Washington, he was accidentally called Kurt by somebody.
I mean, it's not that far off.
Right, but us, you know, Eagles and other non-Washington fans used it to make fun of him, the fact that nobody actually knows the starting quarterback's name.
Biggest storyline here for the Minnesota Vikings is at what point does Laquon Treadwell just throw on 40 pounds and just become a tight end that he's always destined to become?
Wow. More sad. You hate to see it. You hate to hear it.
Remember when people had him as wide receiver one?
It could not be me! It was a little bit before my time.
Could not be me!
What was you? What did you do?
Probably like Josh Doctson or something. Like, it was terrible. I don't know.
Yeah, listen, that wide receiver class, brother.
Yeah, it was not good. But thankfully, they have guys like Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs ahead of them. That's good news for them.
By the way, Adam Thielen, my son from the beginning, Adam Thielen, who in 2017, when I was tweeting about how good Adam Thielen was, and I was being ridiculed and slandered on this website.
We're not on a website.
Yeah, well, I think it's just generally Twitter. It's all we ever talk about.
Okay.
I always like to claim Thielen because I always was really impressed with his game. But
Thielen's very good.
Yeah.
Minnesota had one really big need going into the draft, and I think it was offensive line. And they drafted two guys who I think are very good. They drafted Garrett Bradbury, and they drafted Drew Samia, who I really like both of those guys. Love those two picks. They also drafted Irv Smith Jr. from Alabama. He's now backing up Kyle Rudolph. He's going to get a lot of looks out of 12 personnel sets. I think that's really going to help out Kirk Cousins a lot. You hope Dalvin Cook can stay healthy because Dalvin Cook was so awesome when he was playing at Florida State. Their backup running back right now, my boy Alexander Mattison, who I had
He's going to have a big part of that team, brother.
Listen, man, I don't know where you had him ranked, but I watched him late in the draft process, and I'm like, yo, why did y'all not tell me about him? Because I think I ended up with Mattison as, like, my RB6 or RB7.
Oh, wow, so, that's
healthy. Yeah, I'm, like, Alexander Mattison hive, dude. So, very excited to see him there at that point. On defense, Danielle Hunter, Everson Griffin, Linval Joseph, Anthony Barr, Eric Kendricks, Trey Waynes, Harrison Smith, Xavier Rhodes. They got all kinds of people on that defense. This is a defense. They got Jalen Holmes and Jaleel Johnson as well on the defensive line, who I like as backup guys.
Let us hope.
They also have Hercules Mata'afa, if any of you out there are Hercules Mata'afa
first stands. First stringer Hercules Mata'afa for you.
If any of you guys out there stands. And they also have Chris Boyd that they drafted to play in the secondary. So this is a talented roster. You know, this team is 2 years removed from, you know, the Minnesota Miracle, where Stephon Diggs took the touchdown against the Saints all the way in the end zone in the late game. They ended up playing the Eagles. Absolutely got curb stomped as the Eagles went on their way to win what, Ben?
I'm sorry. Well, can you say that again? I missed that last 2 seconds.
I said that the Minnesota Vikings went on to Philadelphia to get absolutely curb stomped by the Eagles
Trevor, you cut out again. If you could just repeat what you said there, the last, like, sentence or so.
I'm literally trying to set you up to say that they won the Super Bowl.
And I just love hearing. Listen, like, it's very, very sad, Trevor, because Minnesota Viking fans came down and, like, thought they were doing, like, a whole invasion thing, and it was very feeble. And they talked a whole lot of mess about, like, the quality of Philadelphia fans and the fact that we threw snowballs at Santa, like, literally 50 years ago. And then just got eviscerated. Just guts emptied out.
Didn't they start that game 7-0, right?
Yes.
Minnesota started off 7-0. And what was it, like, 41-7?
And then it was a Chris Long hit to a Patrick Robinson pick six.
Hate to see
it. And then the floodgates opened. And so many Eagles, including Chris Long, have been asked, like, what's your favorite game as an Eagle, not the Super Bowl? And they always go, it was the conference championship game against the Vikings, because it was just a rock concert.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that for a lot of these guys, you know, like, the Super Bowl is awesome, but it's a neutral stadium. You've got all kinds of different fans there. You've got media days. It's like the scrutiny's kind of crazy. When you play in an NFC championship game and you host it, like, how freaking awesome is that, man? I mean, that's a no-brainer to me that they would be able to say that. But anyway, so what?
Cannot tell you how happy I am that the Vikings discussion was co-opted into talking about the Eagles beating them in the NFC Championship game, and it wasn't even me.
I think that I bring all of that up to say that I think that the Minnesota Vikings are still a very talented team. I think Mike Zimmer's a pretty good head coach, and I think that they are going to bounce back from the year that they had previously. I think that the Vikings are the second best team in the NFC North, and though I think that the Bears are probably, I'm with you, I don't think they're going to win 12 games again, right? I think the Bears are closer to 10. I think the Vikings are right there at like 9 or 10 or something like that. I think the Vikings are going to finish one game below either the Bears finishing with 10 or 11 wins. I think the Vikings are going to finish that one game below them, either at 10 or 9 themselves. And I think they have a chance to get into the playoffs as well, because I think they have the roster to do it and they have the experience to do it. And if they do, they're a dangerous team. I think they can absolutely be a team that wins a wild card game, gets to a divisional series, and then a divisional weekend, and then seeing what happens from there. So I still have a lot of really positive outlook for them. I like their draft. I like the guys that they added in early on. What do you think?
Right, so here's my take with Minnesota. Minnesota gets lauded as this, you know, analytics-based team that they just simply aren't.
Nerds.
Right? Like they just, and it's the reality of, like, they hired John DeFilippo, the Eagles offensive, or the Eagles quarterbacks coach, who was part of the 38-7 victory in the NFC Championship game. He was part of the Eagles' very strong 2017 season. DeFilippo comes and is not great. Things he did that, you know, were not cool. Like, Stephon Diggs had some of his, like, shallowest depth of targets in his career, right? So, like, some not good stuff. But he came to sling the pill, and he came to throw the ball around the yard a little bit, install an RPO offense. And Zimmer got more and more and progressively more tired about that. And in doing so, fired DeFilippo and put in Kevin Stefanski, who is here to install a run-first approach. And they go and they make the first pick with Garrett Bradbury, and they go and they make the next pick tight end Irv Smith, and then the next pick Alexander Mattison, and then the next pick Drew Samia. Then I mean they want to block and they want to run the football. It's just not the way that like Zimmer wants to play defense, run the rock, have six possessions a game, and win everything 13-7. It's just not how it's done anymore. I mean, I think he had a excuse me, he had a modern mind in DeFilippo. He had the ability to create a modern approach with Thielen and Diggs, and now he's reneging on it. And you've got Cousins on a guaranteed contract to hand the football off now. And then on top of that, Zimmer's defensive approach hasn't even really been that good. The man's still playing split safeties. It's not working, you know. And so I just do not think that Zimmer is leading this team in the right direction from a philosophical standpoint.
I don't know if I'm that harsh on it. I could see those angles though. You want to be trending in the right direction. You want to be trending in the, hey, we're more on the innovative side. We're more pushing it certain ways. But even though I think that you're right in like what side of the coin they might be going, the talent on their offense, mainly even just Thielen and Diggs,
sure,
is
and like
so
the
good
line
that I think that it makes up for it. Yeah. All you need to do is block a little bit for Dalvin Cook, let Kirk Cousins play some play action, and get the ball into the hands of Thielen and Diggs.
Are you reading all these quotes about Kirk Cousins talking about play action?
No, I've... What quotes?
So Cousins has been talking about how he wishes there was more play action in the offense.
Well, that's
really likes...
that's an obvious. Like, you can go back to his best days, and they operate out of heavy play action
yes,
sets.
Right, and so he's been talking about this, but he's using language that is very much so... Like, Kirk has been reading some articles from Ben Baldwin. Like, he's been reading some articles from PFF. Like, he's talking about, like, and, you know, you don't necessarily need to establish a running game to have play action be more effective.
Yeah!
Like, he's clearly
We're doing it!
Yeah, exactly. We're that's how we're going to sneak in. So be
never draft a single running back ever again. Yeah. Ever.
No, and so it's like he's been having these quotes, and the like, analytics Twitter is very proud
That's
of Kirk
funny.
Cousins. Which, if your champion is Kirk Cousins, probably not great, but.
That's funny. That's really funny. I'll pick as my rookie, Drew Samia. I could very easily pick Garrett Bradbury, and I don't even know if Samia is going to start. However, I think that Samia is going to have the opportunity to become a starter. I mean, this guy had a lot of playing time at Oklahoma. Is a very experienced offensive lineman. Is versatile. He's played both inside and out. I think he played right tackle for a lot of years, and then he kicked inside for a little bit. So, that like, he is the X-factor offensive lineman to me. Because Garrett Bradbury, yes, you needed an offensive lineman there at the top with your first pick. They end up picking Garrett Bradbury, okay? That was the one that was a lock. Samia is the bonus. Samia is the one who I really liked that they got later in the draft, who can become an impact guy starting for them. And then you're getting two birds with one stone. You're knocking out two offensive line spots that you've really needed in one draft class. Really love the Samia pick. Love the experience. Love that he's versatile already, because that's another thing too. If you're not starting right away, multiple coaches, every coach will probably actually tell you, you have to be a swing player. You've got to be able to play inside or out if I need you to, if you're a backup offensive lineman. Until you have, you know, Dirk Cutter used to say this, and for all of his faults that he had while he was a head coach at Tampa Bay, he said that until you have a starting spot, I need you to be able to play any spot on the offensive line. And that's kind of the way that I think a lot of coaches approach some of their backup guys, because you just can't keep that many offensive linemen when it comes down to the final 53-man roster. So Samia, with his experience, with his versatility, and with his upside, how good that I think that he is, he's a really big pick for them, and I think he could make a huge impact as a silent little low-key X factor later in this draft class.
So, yeah, so if you look at this Vikings wide receiver depth chart behind Thielen and Diggs, it's Chad Beebe, Laquan Treadwell, Brandon Zylstrom, Jeff Badet, Badet, right? And then they had two seventh-round draft picks, Old BC Johnson and Dylan Mitchell. It's not very clear who's wide receiver three for them right now. They like what they have in Chad Beebe. Brandon Zylstra is a guy who they've been a fan of for, you know, they've had him in the building now for 2 years, and they're trying to develop him into something, whatever. I think that Treadwell's done. I think we're officially out with Treadwell. And so these two seventh-rounders, and Dylan Mitchell out of Oregon and BC Johnson out of Colorado State, two players who I liked, there's room for playing time, especially if you can give some a special teams value. If you had asked me after the draft, I would have said Mitchell. Reports out of the Vikings camp, out of 53-man roster projections, out of the preseason, all indicate that BC Johnson's got a much stronger lock on his spot. BC's not a consummate athlete. He's not a guy who's going to, you know, break a lot of tackles. He's going to do this. He's very polished. He's very measured. He's a good depth piece because he can probably do a lot of stuff and fill a lot of injured gaps for you. And so I found the Vikings' lack of addressing wide receiver early interesting, because I would have liked to have added a third body with Jason Thielen. Obviously, you have Irv Smith, the tight end, so maybe that's a bit of it. But B.C. Johnson, I think, has an opportunity to be a wide receiver four on this team. And with injuries, he can fill a lot of different roles.
I regret to inform the podcast public that the Minnesota Vikings have Jake Browning, so everything that we just talked about is null and void.
Okay, well, I mean, like, they're not going to have him after, you know, 53-man cuts.
The Green Bay Packers, final team that we're thinking about. It is very rare, Ben, that a new head coach is in a situation like Matt LaFleur is. Because often when you're talking about a Hall of Fame quarterback in the tail end of his prime, you just don't switch offensive coordinators very often. I mean, just because the relative success between having a good quarterback and having enough success in wins and losses to keep guys around often goes hand in hand. It just hasn't been the case for Aaron Rodgers over the last couple of years, especially for the standards that the Packers want it to be at.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where the division came from with him and Mike McCarthy. McCarthy is out. LaFleur comes in. LaFleur is now a first-time head coach who is taking over for a player who is, like I said, it's rare. It's rare that you get the situation where you've got a Hall of Fame quarterback that you are inheriting. So this situation is kind of delicate because, in one sense, LaFleur is coming in to bring in a different style of offense. But I think over the last couple of years, Rodgers got so comfortable basically telling McCarthy to F off that he could do whatever he wanted at the line. He could all call all kinds of audibles. He could get creative even mid-play with his wide receivers, improvise so much because Aaron Rodgers is so good at it because he's one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game. But now, with LaFleur in here, they're wanting things a little bit more structured. They're playing from different formations. They're playing from under center a little bit more. There's less creativity from what I have been reading about what LaFleur is trying to implement there. There's less creativity at the line. There's less creativity, you know, they hope, mid-play and improvisation. So that's not really been Rodgers' MO for the last couple of years. So where's the rubber going to meet the road in this instance? Is this either going to go really well and they're going to have more of a dink and I don't want to say dink and dunk because that sounds insulting, but a less erratic offense where you've just got Rodgers chucking it deep, delivering perfect passes, hoping Devontae Adams comes up with it. More orchestrated of an offense, more controlled, more play action, more deception. That's what I think LaFleur is trying to do as a disciple of like what McVay is and Kyle Shanahan and that kind of tree of coaching. That's what he's trying to bring to Green Bay, and that just has not been what Rodgers has been used to over the last couple of years. And does the aging Rodgers, how willing is he going to be to buy into what Matt LaFleur, a first-time head coach, is going to try to do in Green Bay? That dynamic is extremely fascinating, and honestly, man, it all hinges upon that relationship and how that offense goes. That's what I believe.
I really, really, and I you know, no basis for this because Aaron Rodgers is a character and interesting dude. I've never met him. But, I mean, if you're Rodgers and you've had this whole, I'm going to audible one out of every three plays and I'm going to, you know, make these like little like shaky, little bit passive aggressive comments in the media and everything like that. And you get a new head coach in LaFleur who like simply, by no stretch of the imagination, by no indication that I have, is being like, listen, Aaron, it's my way or the highway. Like, that's just not who LaFleur is, and it's not the system he runs. It's not the guy he studied under in McVay, right?
Right.
If Rodgers isn't going to buy in, then, like, you're your own worst enemy, dude. Like, there's this
Well, that is a very real possibility.
Right.
Rodgers just might be his own worst enemy at this point in his career. We don't know.
And that's the thing, is, like, there's this big conversation about, like, is Rodgers really as good as he's billed as, right? Yes. And, like, you know, because various ways of understanding quarterback play. Now, Ryan's always been a guy who unbelievable throws,
who?
Right? The
who?
Highlight
play. Who did you say?
Rodgers. Rodgers has always been a guy.
I thought
guy.
You said Ryan. I was like, Matt Ryan?
Ryan, no. Rodgers has always been an unbelievable big play guy. And the touchdown to interception ratios and the ability to avoid bad plays in terms of interceptions while on the move is sublime. Now,
that's why they call him Big Play A, you know?
I didn't know they did, but okay.
I don't think anybody does.
Yeah, I didn't think so either, but you can do that. That's
not
cool
for good. Not for good reason. I'm not doing that. It's a stupid nickname.
Okay, then I don't know why you brought it up. I was kind of trying to get into a groove there, but it's fine. I'm just going to pick it back
up. You know this
off.
Is my stick. I got to derail
you
a little bit.
Do you have anything else to interject?
Cheesecake. There you go. All right, keep
go
going.
Gators. Chomp, chomp. Rodgers, so the interception rate's tremendous. The big play ability, the throw on the move, out of this world. Sack rate's not great, right? So he takes a lot of sacks, but he's that like a little bit of a high risk sort of quarterback that when you live with it, 'cause the throws he can make. But you know, you've been playing in a McCarthy offense. You feel like it's been too short. It's been getting the ball out of your hands. You know, you want to be able to do more play action. You want to be able to throw it more deep. Okay, now you have LaFleur. If you're going to be unwilling at 35 with one ring to adjust what you need to adjust to make this relationship with LaFleur harmonious, because you have an opportunity to reset your relationship with your head coach and your offensive designer now. You haven't had that in many years. McCarthy's always been around. Once it got noxious, it wasn't really going to get fixed. Okay. You have that opportunity. If you don't take it, you know, you're going to be remembered as the guy with a ton of talent who wasn't able to put it all together, even though you had the one, you know, you had the MVP campaigns, and even though you had the one Super Bowl, right? Because we know what you can do, Aaron. We've seen it. And so, like, the opportunity here for Rodgers with I think, a young and improving wide receiver core, with, I think, that an offensive line that's gotten better. I think if Elgton Jenkins is able to step in and start, then I think you've got a good situation with their offensive line, considering that everybody stays healthy. Mike Pettine in the defense is the best you've had since Dom Capers was gone by a mile. This is it. Like, the Packers, on paper, if Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers, should be a very, very good football team. If they are not, 9 out of 10 times that they're not a good team, it's because Rodgers is effing about when he doesn't need to be. And that'll be very frustrating if it's the case, because Rodgers is a sublime talent who should be remembered as such and should be reflected in his career achievements. And the reason it hasn't been, yes, it's probably a bit due to McCarthy, but you got to pick up both ends of the stick there. It's also part Rodgers. Like, if you're going to be more stubborn than you are talented, you're not going to turn out the production that you should. And if that's what you want to do, that's fine. That's you. I'm not in charge of your life. But it'll just be annoying because I want to remember you in a better light than that.
Speaking of Rodgers continuing to perform, Jay Sternberger is my rookie, who I'm picking to be an impact guy for the Packers. Really like Jay Sternberger. As I watched his tape kind of late in the process, he's a guy who I didn't really get to study until, boy, I don't know. I really got into him, I think, around like February or March. Really liked what I saw from him. I think he could be an interesting journeyman. I think I'm pretty sure he started at Kansas, was where he started. Couldn't get on the field at Kansas.
Yes.
Ends up transferring, goes JUCO, then goes to Texas A&M, then all of a sudden he's Kellen Mond's like main target and one of Texas A&M's best wide receiver or best receiving weapons. I think he can step in right away. He's in a tight end room now with an aging Jimmy Graham and an aging Mercedes Lewis. Sternberger is clearly the future at tight end for this team, but he gets to learn behind two guys that have been in the league for a really long time. One of them had a stint as the most successful tight end in the NFL during his prime years. So I think that's huge for him. I think it's huge that he's not going to be the only guy there, and I think he is quickly going to become, if everything goes according to plan, like you were saying before, one of Rodgers' main targets, especially in a Matt LaFleur offense. So really like that pick there, like the fit, and I hope that him and Rodgers can have a great connection.
I mean, yeah, Sternberger is, I think, a huge pick. I really, really think that, like, he's going to be probably the best year one Noah Fant in Denver. He's going to be a lot better than people think. Elgton Jenkins is my guy. He's a guy that I brought up. Jenkins, I liked him a lot out of Mississippi State. A classic example of a offensive lineman who's not sexy to evaluate. Not every O-line guy can be Nelson. Nelson. Hugh Nelson. I'm like stuck saying Quinton now instead of Quinton Nelson. Not every player can be Nelson. But Jenkins, not sexy, doesn't have, you know, amazing finishes and blindside blocks and whatnot, but he gets his business done. His ability to re-anchor, recover, and survive in the interior is great. probably not going to be starting at center for them because of Corey Linsley, but I think if he can beat out Lane Taylor or Billy Turner or get on the field due to injury, Elton's, I think, a ready-made starter. And this offensive line has struggled so much with health over the past few years, so Elton's a big deal.
No, I think that he's got a chance to start at either interior offensive line spot. Maybe not right away, but injuries also happen on the offensive line, unfortunately. And so I think that Elton, even if he's not starting right away at center, like you were saying, there's an opportunity for him to play on the interior somewhere. I think his deer is going to go on.
Right, Ben, because he's the next man up. He's O-line six. Yes. Three out of the five positions.
Yes, he is. Ben, we went 45 minutes on this podcast. We are bad at keeping podcasts very short. And we apologize for it?
Or we are good at giving the listeners content. It's one of these two things.
That's where I was going. No, we're not. We're out here to educate the masses on our opinions, which are, of course, 100% certified, all-American, correct. Imagine missing on a prospect, Ben.
I wonder what it's like for the ignoramuses, for the fools that have to deal with just a lack of complete certainty that every opinion they have will actually be enshrined as fact within the next few years.
Two more divisions to talk about this week as we get ready to celebrate college football being back, the start of week zero, which will be this Saturday when Hawaii kicks off. Who's Hawaii playing? Hawaii kicks off against
Arizona, Chomp Chomp, Miami, and then, BYU, Utah. And then,
Florida plays against Miami. That's the big one coming up on Saturday. We have those two divisions to get to. We're obviously going to have Fan Friday on Friday, but we also have a special guest coming up later this week. I'm very, very excited about this. It is a big name in the scouting world. We're going to get to sit down and have a long exclusive with a guy who has his hand. I think it's fair to say that he has his hand in a major part of the scouting process throughout the draft calendar.
Right, and he's got a big week coming up, so.
And he has a very big week coming up, but we're going to get to him. We can't ruin it right, the surprise for you right now. But we might tell you who it is tomorrow, so you got to tune into that. Until then,
Jesus,
you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.